It's episode 205 of the Kaiju Podcast, and you are listening to your host, Chad O'Brien, who is filling in for Chris Charlton, who is doing Chris Charlton-y things, but with me at my right-hand side, or my left-hand side, or my screenward side, I'm not sure, is Jason Gibson.
Hello, hello, hello.
And I assure you, he will not keep that accent up through the entire podcast.
Nah, I'll switch it around. Maybe some Australian, a little Scottish.
Yes, and we'll just offend the entire world.
I'm an equal opportunity offender.
That's right. We like to offend people around here. Most of those people are Chris, with our lack of knowledge of old games, which he sufficiently schooled me on in our last episode.
We knew some stuff.
Yeah, we knew some stuff, but not enough. Never enough.
It's never enough for Chris.
And I guarantee you I've forgotten everything Chris already taught me in that lesson. something about a microphone on a controller and something about Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. Was it The Journey Continues? I can't remember. Legend of the Fist and Surf Ninjas and Beverly Hills Cop, and wait, where am I going with this?
I have no idea, but you better hurry up and get there.
I'm just recalling my past, my youth, when I made very, very silly decisions.
My youth, last week.
Well, come on, I am past the 30 mark, so I officially enough. Have a youth.
Like, it's true. It's true.
That's right. So, but, you know, we sometimes think about all these old decisions we made and what poor decisions we made. That's going to be the first lead off that we go with, because there's not a lot of news. And so we're going to talk about someone else's poor decision. And that is I don't know how to pronounce his name. Mr. Schellenbach or Kellendorf, or the person formerly known as PewDiePie. That's right. Recently it just came out that PewDiePie apparently got an advance demo copy of The Last Guardian, which is a very, very strange decision on the part of Sony.
Absolutely.
Because, first off, it's not coming out until December for the rest of the consumers. And even then, that was the delay from the date of October 25th.
Which was a delay from earlier already.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. But this was the one they were, you know, knuckling down on, October 25th.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some things happened and they had to push it, and they're like, okay, we're coming out in December now. And that's really the very last delay they can do, because they had a big showing that it's going to be in 2016. Everybody knows that Sony's just full of delays. They have no exclusives coming out this holiday season now. But,
yep.
I mean, technically, it still comes out before Christmas, but we're talking about before Black Friday.
Right.
It was supposed to come out October 25th, and PewDiePie apparently got his hands on a copy officially from Sony. This isn't like some kind of leaked copy or anything like that. He was not impressed. And in his video, he talked about how he remembers going to one of his local GameStops and putting down money for a pre-order in 2010. And, like, just so you understand, like, the passage of time, because 6 years might not seem that long, but 2010 was before PewDiePie was even a thing.
Yeah, I don't think that his name was still Schellenbach or whatever it is.
it's Felix something. I know it's Felix, but... he started his channel, his YouTube channel, in 2010, and I don't think he became popular until 2012. I could be wrong, but 2010. He talks about putting down money. It's kind of funny. He talks about putting down 50 Swedish crowns. In case you didn't know, he is from Sweden. So Swedish crown, 50 Swedish crowns for this game, and he says he would like those back. Just for my own research curiosity sense, I went to not xe.com, where you can find out the current exchange rates. I went to wolframalpha.com, where you can check out previous exchange rates. And I checked out 50 Swedish crowns in 2010, and how much that was worth.
Lay it on us, Chad.
That's right. 50 Swedish crowns was $7. There you go.
What? He wants $7 back.
That's right. $7 back with interest, I'm sure, over 6 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Prime plus one. Get in on that. But I'm not even sure how old PewDiePie was back then. Although it sounds strange. Like, I've never heard of putting down, like, $7 or $5 or something for a pre-order of a game.
Well, but what was the release schedule like in 2010? What did they declare it at that time? Was it going to come out like in 2 years or something?
Oh, do not ask me. I know they originally came out with the announcement at E3 2009. So this could have been just a thing like Amazon or all the big sites do, where they just put like a placeholder date and you can pre-order. But again, I've never heard of actually having to lay down cash for this pre-order. I don't know what that's all about, but maybe Sweden has different rules, or maybe different shops have different rules. I've just never heard of this one. Yeah, that's one decision he regrets, and I'll bet you Sony regrets giving him that demo copy. Because PewDiePie now has over 45 million subscribers. I'm sure many of them are bots, but he still gets millions of views. And now those millions of views are saying, actually, you know what? You don't need this game. And I regretted pre-ordering it. And yeah. So, good on you, Sony. Yeah, there's a game that was a decade in development and was already going to tank. And I can't imagine this did anything to help that. You know, fiscal.
Yeah. Did you actually watch the whole 20-minute video?
I did not.
The whole thing?
Because I personally can't stand PewDiePie, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't either, so I didn't. I was just like, what exactly were his complaints about it? It was just like, just didn't live up to the hype?
Oh, I'm sure that was it. Yeah. I didn't watch the video, but.
Don't know, yeah.
Yeah. And personally, like, I'm trying not to read too much into it, because I will still get the game, and I don't want to have it spoiled for me, so.
Well, you know, he is kind of a jackass, so it might actually be a good game, and he's just being a jackass.
It certainly could, but, everyone on the internet is a jackass, so,
true.
That's right.
True.
Let's go to something that's apparently doing a lot better, or Sony at least hopes it's doing a lot better.
Right.
That is, we had the launch of the PlayStation VR.
Yeah.
That's right. So we had the brand new launch on October 13th, and that is apparently selling quite well, because it's still sold out in Japan several days, well, just a few, I guess, but a couple of days after. You still can't get it on Amazon. Much to my chagrin, there are several resellers holding it hostage, I would say, for 80,000 yen, which in USD right now, that's about $770. Whereas you can go to Amazon.com if you live in the West and get it for a cool 500. Although it should also mention that the launch bundle in the US is a lot different than in Japan, because in Japan, all you get is the headset and the camera and the demo disc. You don't even get the Move controllers like you do in the bundle for the West.
Really? And that's the same price?
Well, no, even then, it's 53,000 yen, which is about $500, which, yeah, okay, I guess it's the same price. So,
wow.
Yeah, you have to shell out for those Move controllers as well, which are also sold out on Amazon.
And I heard that the games on the demo disc are, like, different.
That's true. There are fewer games on the Japanese disc. I don't know what games are there, and we talked about, like, the 18 games that come on the Western disc before. Or even if we didn't, I'm not going to go over all of them. But
there's only like five in Japan, right?
That's right. But if you have access to a North American account, as I do, you can just go onto the PlayStation Store and download the demo disc. There's a digital demo disc, and that comes with all 18 of those titles. So not a big issue. Although it is interesting. To see that Sony itself is predicting hundreds of thousands of units to be sold by the end of 2016. And there was at least one consumer data research firm that that estimates over 2 million PlayStation VR units will be sold by the end of by the end of 2016, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous.
What are their production numbers? How many did they even make?
See, that's the thing. Like, I don't believe they have anywhere near that production capacity. Especially because they're also currently making the Slim and the PS4 Pro.
Right, because I mean, if they were only projecting, say, 250,000 in sales, would they make 2 million? I don't think so.
Right. And I don't think, I mean, maybe worldwide I could see up to 500,000. Like, I would like to know the figures of how many pre-orders they actually had. But unfortunately those details are almost never released. Right. So we'll have to wait for the MPD, to tell us all about that. Although it is notable that I think this is just my personal view. I think that PlayStation VR definitely has the best potential for market penetration.
Well, it has the largest available audience. I mean, right. the amount of owners of a PS4 is vastly outnumbers any other platform that a VR headset is available for.
And just as an optical thing, we've talked about this before. People see, like, they already have a PlayStation 4 at home. They see, oh, look, I can get this thing for $400, which is a bit misleading because you can get the headset, but you still need the camera and the Move controllers. But still, they see that $400 price tag, and they're like, okay, I can get that. Or I can get the Oculus. Oh, whoa, $600, and I need a computer for that?
And the only real competition I can think of, I mean, at least in numbers, would be that Google Daydream.
Right. But that's a different level. And even the big boys have talked about how those are serious competitors. They're going to sell in volume, like Gear, and Gear VR is already selling in high volume. But,
right.
But the thing is, we don't really know what their numbers are either. Oculus is being completely, like, you know, behind the curtain. They're not telling anyone their numbers. Valve isn't really sharing their data, but at the same time, people have done things like they look at the Steam stats or whatever those are called, for the in-package software, the Tilt Brush.
Right.
And there was something like 150,000 downloads of that. So that you can knock off a few for people who, I don't know, maybe downloaded twice or something. I don't know. But it said something, 150,000 downloads, but 120,000 actual users. So,
yeah.
So there's something. And, if PlayStation can double that, then, more power to them. Sean Layden has already said that the VR is already profitable for Sony. I don't know if that includes, if that's just manufacturing R&D, or if that also includes the marketing and the something like 500,000 demo stations they've set up across the world. But if that's true, then that's something to be proud of, I guess.
Yeah.
Although at the same time, like we've talked about on this program before, the thing is, you have to realize that really the only new technology with the PlayStation VR headset is the headset itself. because they're using the old camera for the PlayStation 4 and they're using the Move controllers for the PlayStation 3. So they didn't have quite as much to deal with.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's not like they needed to use new technology for those other things. It's just, you know, like what advances have there been in Move controllers, to be honest?
If you look at actual dissections of the technology on, for example, the Vive has multiple sensors on each of their little hand controllers. So it gets very accurate tracking because it's detecting multiple points. Whereas the Move controllers are just looking for that giant big ball. So first off, you can make the sensor much smaller on more modern controllers.
Fair enough.
And, then there are also issues where, like, there have been issues with tracking where, sometimes even if you're in a very well lit room, like, you can have trouble because the PlayStation 4 camera is looking for the lights. And if you're in a lit room, it will see lights everywhere. Or some people have even said, like, they could just be wearing a super white shirt and it will, like, reflect off of the white. If you're in, like, a dark room, you know, then it will reflect off your white shirt and it will read that as another light, and cause issues. But, that has been one critique that comes up a lot in reviews, is that PlayStation VR suffers, not to the point of making everything terrible, but it definitely does suffer in tracking issues. On the flip side, it does seem to have the library that's drawn the most appeal. So there's that. And,
seems to be the most easily accessible one.
Right. As we talked about, on this program, you just have to put all kinds of different factors together to see what you want. And Oculus and Vive are already working on their second iterations. I'm sure PlayStation is, or Sony is as well. But for example, Oculus, announced, I don't know what it's called, it was something like Dream. Oh, I can't remember. It was some special technology where basically they can put all the technology in the headset and let it run on a computer half as powerful as it needs to be right now.
Oh, I had heard about that. Yeah, like that's actually processing units in the headset itself.
Yeah. So by putting in this new technology, basically you can run VR on a $500 computer instead of a $1,000 computer.
Right.
But at the same time, you know... people will still be confused. The average consumer won't really want to have to check through all their specs.
And I can't imagine that, you know, putting processors in a headset would not drive up the price of that headset.
I don't know. Technology is always getting cheaper. That is a question for another day.
Also true.
That's right. We'll just leave that there. And why don't we talk about scary, scary, spooky things?
Sure.
Are you scared of Halloween, Jason?
Only when it tries to kill me.
Do you ever go to haunted houses?
No.
No, I mean, I'm seriously asking.
The last haunted house I went to was, like, Disneyland, I think. They had the Haunted Mansion. Went there 5 years ago.
That doesn't count. I'm talking like something that actually like forces you to go through dark corridors and people jump out with fake knives and things like that.
Nope. Never had the desire to do that.
Okay. I've done a few of those in Japan. And it's actually interesting. I haven't been to one for a long time in the States, obviously, because I've been here for 8 years.
Right.
But the first time I went to one in Japan was about 4 years ago, and I was intrigued because it wasn't just a haunted house, it was a haunted house with a story. So you had to do the silly things where you go through corridors and people jump out at you and walls shake and stuff like that. But like I already know all those tricks, but this one was like you had to go in groups of three or four, I can't remember, but groups, and you had to go through to find this special doll and like collect its eye, and then eventually return the eye to the corpse that it was removed from, basically.
So you were in a horror movie.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you didn't put it like in the corpse's, you know, face or anything like that. You just put it like it was like a marble, and you put it in this basket, but like you had to actually like, you know, reach in, and of course something like jumps out and grabs you.
Right.
But, yeah, so, of course, like, I was the one chosen. I'm like, all right, yeah, I know it's coming. As soon as I touch the marble, I'm like, okay, all right, hey, buddy, how are you doing? Like, I bring this up because, of course, we're starting to have Halloween events now. Halloween sales and Halloween costumes and Halloween goods everywhere, when it's not Christmas. I mean,
God.
I'm sure Christmas decorations will go up next week.
I've seen them.
Starbucks will start playing the music, I'm sure.
I saw them in America, man. Christmas stuff up already.
Yep. Anyway, the gaming world is also being taken over by Halloween, most prominently in Overwatch right now, where they released their first PvE little brawl. It's basically, it's interesting. I know you don't play Overwatch, so basically what they did was they took a section of a map and basically walled it off so you can't go past it. They've dressed up 8 of the characters in different Halloween outfits. 4 of them are good and 4 of them are evil AI controlled. One of the evil ones is Dr. Junkenstein, which is Junkrat has become
right.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Right.
And he's created these robots to basically take over the castle. So this is the Eichenwald map. So the robots are basically just creeps. They'll march forward through 3 different lanes, and they get to the castle wall, and then they explode. So you have to shoot them down. But in the midst of all this, like, you sometimes this little cinematic scene comes up, and it's kind of neat. Like, it zooms in, and it says, you know, the creature of the night has made his appearance. And suddenly there's Reaper in his Halloween outfit, where he's basically the Headless Horseman. And he comes down, he's got all his skills, and so you have to deal with the Reaper while fighting the robots that are destroying the door. It's pretty interesting because it also locks the heroes into 4 categories, so you can only choose a soldier, McCree, Anna for healing, and, who was the last one? Oh, and Hanzo. So you've got 3 damage dealers, arguably 2 snipers, and the only healing you can do is through your characters. There are no health packs on the game.
Right, okay. So, like, do you still queue in with 2 separate teams, or is it just, like, 1 team queues up and plays it?
One team. So, like I said, this is PvE. There's no PvP here, so
right.
The entire team is just the good guys. Okay. But yeah, you can do a pickup match. You can go in with like 3 strangers, and that's okay. But of course, like, I got, you know, 3 of my friends together, and we all went in. And it's nice. Like, there's 3 different levels: easy, medium, hard. And hard is definitely hard. We haven't been able to complete that yet. I guess it's hard for people with average skills.
are there different rewards for the difficulty levels?
Yeah, so just completing the levels, you get different sprays. For completing the levels with all the different characters, not each, but all of the different characters, you get a different spray. If you complete a level without getting any damage to the castle wall, then you get another spray. So, Haven't managed to do that no damage run yet on any level, but
It almost sounds like they sort of like MOBA'd it up a little bit with like creeps and lanes and stuff.
Yeah, and people have also made comparisons to the old Team Fortress 2 mode, man versus machine.
Right.
But at the same time, like, Overwatch has always been compared to Team Fortress 2, and man versus machine hasn't been updated in about 6 years. So so it's about time something else came out.
Yeah.
But then there are also, because it's Halloween, they released a whole bunch of skins and play of the game intros and stuff like that. And where they diverged from the Summer Games loot boxes is that you can now buy these with credits that you earn in the game. So you don't have to worry about like, oh, I didn't get this thing. Like, now you can just buy it. No more problems.
That's good.
Although it kind of upsets me that they did not unlock the Summer Games items with this update. So those are still locked permanently.
That's just kind of like a Blizzard thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm sure.
And like, cause I remember, oh God, back in like 2008 when I was still playing WoW, mm-hmm. like they had a special event for in Sydney Summer Olympics.
Okay.
No, it was China. Because you could get like a special little dragon pet that you'll never be able to get again. And I know like the Halloween stuff will come back every year. So like that's kind of okay. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of like, you know, a kick in the pants that you'll never be able to get that Summer Olympic stuff again, at least, you know, once every 4 years or something.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind so much if it didn't stay in the list of like, you know, when you're switching your skins. Or buying new skins.
So there's just a permanently grayed out one that know you'll never get.
That's right. Yep.
That's just cruel, man.
Yeah. It says unlock through Summer Games loot boxes, and it's like, no, you can't get those anymore. And there's a Bastion skin coming up for the upcoming BlizzCon. And only if you bought like a ticket to BlizzCon or
If you buy that virtual ticket, you get one.
Yep.
Yeah, that's like old card backs in Hearthstone. You know, they're all in the list, but you'll never get them because you only get the card backs for achieving a certain rank in the season play. And then once that season's gone, you'll never get that card back again. So mm-hmm. it's just like a big list of like 20 card backs that I don't have, and I'm like, man, I really want that one.
And that will basically do it for all of our news, because as I said, there's really not that much going on. Speaking of Halloween, around that same time, we do have Paris Games Week is coming up, on the 27th.
Yep.
I'm not sure that's gonna be as big as it was last year. I mean, it wasn't huge last year, but there was still like buzz and talk around it.
Yeah, there's not really a whole lot of new news expected, right?
Right. Or at least if there is, I haven't heard about it, so maybe it's all on PC or Xbox. I don't know. But we might get something. But at the same time, we have been playing video games.
Sometimes, a little bit, right. Here and there.
When we get time. When we get time. So I have personally played 3 games this week.
I've got 2.
All right, so then I'll go first.
Go ahead.
I can sandwich these in. Yeah. So I'll talk about, what should I talk about first? Which one do you want to hear about first? The rhythm violence game or the co-op wannabe?
Co-op.
Okay, so this is a game called Manual Samuel by a Norwegian developer whose name escapes me right now. Like I said, this is a co-op wannabe game in that you play Samuel, who is a rich, affluent man who basically doesn't give a crap about the world, but then he dies and goes down to hell and finds out that hell is basically having a job. So you get assigned a menial task. And he definitely doesn't want to do that, so he strikes a deal with Death. And Death says, you know, I'll send you back, and if you can survive for 24 hours, we'll make it like this death just never happened. The caveat is that every action you do is now completely manual. This involves not just walking, which is manual anyway, but also breathing and blinking as well.
What?
Yeah. So, the shoulder and trigger buttons control your arms and legs. You don't really have to use your arms that much. I mean, you use them for grabbing things, but not just for moving. One button each controls your rear, and your front leg. You know, whenever you turn around, they switch, so it's not like left and right leg. You don't have to remember that detailed. So just front and back legs. And you have to move them in sequence. And if you fail, then basically you do the splits. and you have to get yourself back up and start all over again. And so like I said, you also have to start breathing. There's a button for breathing in and a button for breathing out. So you have to do both. If you breathe in too much, your face will start turning red. If you breathe out too much, it'll start turning blue, and you'll pass out if you breathe out too far, or just don't have enough oxygen. And then blinking, there's another button for blinking. If you go too long without it, your eyes start turning red, and the screen actually becomes like fuzzy and white, and you can't see anything anymore. Like I said, it's very co-op style, because you just have to remember all this stuff while you're moving around and while you're doing, all this stuff. Like, you have to, brush your teeth, but, you know, so you have to hold L1, so you're holding your toothbrush, and then press triangle really quickly, so you actually brush your teeth, and sometimes your spine will give out just randomly.
What?
So you just have to press up again to reset your spine. But you have to remember, while you're brushing your teeth, you still have to remember to blink and breathe. And then you have to go to the toilet and aim the stream again, remembering all this different stuff, and then go to shower. And that part itself is kind of silly and fun for about 5 minutes.
Right.
And then it just becomes extremely tedious. Maybe it would be different if I were only playing in 5 minute segments, I guess.
Right.
But I was doing like a half hour at a time. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm really tired of this L2, R2, then stop, press square, circle, XXX, and then L2, R2, L2, you know, going back into the rhythm. I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it.
I wonder if that might be better on a keyboard, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know what the PC control screen is. Then there's the issue of the humor. So, of course, you know, this game is going all tongue-in-cheek and everything, but Death is, he's basically like a 90s punk kid. He has a skateboard, and but he's got a really annoying high-pitched voice, and he's like, "Hey, yo, I'll get you back to, you know, your old lifestyle if you just survive 24 hours, man." It's weird, because I watched videos of this, and apparently they had a different actor before, and I liked that other actor. He was like a Russian kind of voice.
Huh. Is this a Western developer?
No, he's Western, but it's Norwegian developer.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I like that deeper voice much better than the weird, like, childish
skater. Is Death. It kind of fits the character a little better.
That was my first game.
Cool. So, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Kind of middling at the moment. I haven't written my full review, so I can't say yet.
Fair enough. Okay. So you can choose the stealth game or the puzzle game.
I'm going to choose the stealth game, because I know what that is. I know what
it is. Stealth game. It is Aragami. This is a game that came out just this last week, developed by Lintz Works. It's basically almost a pure stealth game. There is some action elements. It almost reminds me of those old Tenchu games. You remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like that.
So it's incredibly hard.
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten to the hard part yet. Like, I've only gone through the first two or three levels, but yeah, it gets pretty hard unless you want to go through and, like, just murder everybody, which is not how I play my stealth games. It kind of makes it too easy, I think.
Yeah, just murdering people. Game, of course, but yeah.
So this is like if you took those old Tenchu games and put in a little splash of Dishonored.
All right.
Kind of. So, like, you know how in, like, Dishonored where you can do your little blink move around, you can sort of hide, and you have, like, little shadow powers and stuff like that, kind of?
Yep.
Yeah, you have those. But the movement and action is much closer to the Tenchu thing, and you're also kind of like a ninja.
All right.
So your main method of movement is blinking from shadow to shadow. You're a ninja who has been summoned or created, it's not clear to me yet which one it is, out of pure shadow, by a girl whose name is Yamiko, Shadow Girl. She's imprisoned in a castle somewhere, and she's performed a ritual to create you or summon you to get her out of the castle. So your ultimate goal is to break into the castle and free this girl. And since you have shadow powers, you can use your shadow energy to instantly teleport between any shadow that you see. So it's actually really kind of interesting. If you're like just sort of crouched down in a shadow, most guys won't see you unless they come like right up next to you and then sort of notice you, but they won't like immediately see you. So you have like half a second to blink away into another shadow or something, or get behind him, or murder him if that's what you want to do.
Or start the whole game over.
And another kind of a little twist they put into it, and like around the end of the first level, is you get the ability to sort of like create your own temporary shadow. So you've got an aiming reticle, just like a little dot. Mm-hmm. And if your aiming reticle is pointed at, say, an area that's not directly lit with light, you can create a patch of shadow, temporary shadow, that'll quickly dissipate. So if you need to like do like a double leap, you can create a patch of shadow, leap to it, and then leap to the next shadow across the way. Or if you're like in just like a big bunch of trouble, like this guy's going to find you and you don't have a way out, you can create a patch of shadow behind him, leap away, and just sort of like figure your way out. And it's also sort of like Dishonored in that you can gain new powers and upgrade those powers. So there's scrolls scattered around the level. You'll find a scroll and that'll give you one point to put into your skill tree. You can gain new skills you can create a kunai, a throwing knife out of pure shadow that you can throw and kill a guy with. And if you upgrade it, it becomes silent and he doesn't scream when you kill him. Or you can gain the ability to like see enemies through walls, or you can get your shadow energy to recharge faster. Like if you stay out of the shadows for too long, your shadow energy sort of drains away. You can get an ability to make it recharge faster. All sorts of different things you can get, which is kind of cool. I really liked it just because I really, really like stealth games. I think it's a lot of fun. It's almost like a puzzle in and of itself, trying to figure out how to maneuver through these guys, because sure. I do no kill, no death runs. And so it makes it a lot harder. It is very obviously an indie game. It was made in Unity. So, I mean, it doesn't look terrible, but it's not super polished. The voices, I'm not really sure if they're in any particular language at all. They do say the words like Aragami and Yamiko, the names of the characters, but like I've had a dialogue screen pop up where it's like five lines of text and they say about four words. So it kind of sounds a little bit like Japanese, but also maybe like Korean. The volume's really super low and I can't really tell. I don't know, but so it's quite obviously indie, but a very well done indie game. I really like it. I'm going to play through it. I only got about an hour and a half of play time. I might actually write a review on this one because I really like it.
So are there any of the skills in the tree that basically kind of break the game? I mean, like, I remember once I got the detective mode in in Dishonored, basically, like, the entire game became a cakewalk.
Oh, yeah, because you can just see everybody all the time.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that skill yet, but doing the no-kill thing, I imagine, would make it a lot easier. If you're doing the kill-everybody route, yeah, I think there are some. Like, you can use your... You can make, like, this shadow tentacles that just sort of, like, kills a guy and sucks him down into the shadows, and so his body is completely gone. You can just, like, eliminate people with no trace.
That's like the rats.
Yeah, basically.
In Dishonored, yeah.
Yeah. So I imagine that's pretty broken, but they also have some sort of, like a limited use on those sorts of abilities.
Uh-huh.
The way they measure your shadow power is you have this cape, and there's like this design on your cape, and the more shadow power you use, the design slowly disappears off of your cape.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, so like that's just like your regular stuff, like you know, walking through light or making patches of shadow. Like the special ones, like throwing the kunai made of shadow or sucking a guy down into shadow, uses these little dots that appear on your cape. And I think you start up with the only the ability to have two dots. You might be able to upgrade those. I'm not sure. And I think those you can only recharge at like shrines. It wouldn't break the game too much because you have limited uses of those sorts of things. But it would make it a hell of a lot easier to just like eliminate a guy with no trace.
I think more games should have capes that tell you how much power you have.
Yeah, like that and Journey, man.
Journey, yeah. I was just thinking of that. And next up, Batman. They'll have that, I'm sure. The better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing the story actually seems pretty interesting. Like I said, I've only gotten an hour into it, but it sort of seems like you initially, it leads you to believe that you were created from Shadow, but I've sort of gotten the feeling that I was actually like brought back. And the guys that you're fighting are like light magic users. So like they have their swords are all lit up, and if you get close to them, they'll light you up. And it sort of seems like there's been a couple of flashbacks that I've seen that makes me think that you used to be one of these light guys, which it's kind of an interesting twist. So we'll see where the story goes. But yeah, I would recommend it. It's really good.
Cool. All right. My second game, I will talk about. I'll just talk about this one real quick before I get into my deeper dive. We've talked about Thumper before, actually, I think like several times on this podcast. Thumper is an amazing indie music game that as I mentioned before, is classified as kind of rhythm violence. You're traveling down a track, I'm sorry, this is a music game where you play like a kind of scarab beetle shaped like bullet thing, and you're, like I said, you're traveling down a single track. This isn't like the game tracks where you switch over or anything like that, just a single track, while music plays around you. This is not licensed or anything, it's all created for the game. It's very industrial, like lots of steel sounds and heavy drums and things like that going on. While in the background there's very psychedelic imagery. It's all very dark, not very dark, it's very contrast heavy. So for the most part, like, you know, the surrounding area is dark, but then yeah, there are these bursts of light of purple and red, and the enemies in particular are gigantic glowing beasts. Because again, this is a violence game, because when you hit the notes will come down the track, and you have to hit them perfectly, and when you do, a big beam of light travels down the track towards the enemy at the end and creates a massive like explosion. Depending on the boss, you have to hit it more or less times, but it's very interesting because this is not a standard like, okay, here's this button, you press this button. It's basically just one button, it's X. And you know, it's very simplistic is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But you do have to do a lot of different things with those inputs. So if there's like a solid light, then you just press the button over that light. But then a turn will come up in the track. So the track's not just a single line. And you have to match your rhythm with that turn or you'll take damage. And when you take damage, like your wing, first your wings blow off. And then if you take more damage, you basically explode. And every level is pretty long, but you do have checkpoints. So if you die, you have to restart that checkpoint. Each checkpoint is also graded on its own, like its own self-contained scale. So you can get, you know, lots of S's and then fail at the very end and get an A for the entire thing. So restart the entire level or something like that. But it's very interesting because the music itself, like I said, very industrial and heavy and very, you know, like rhythm heavy, bass lines and drum beats and things like that. And that makes the core of the music rather than, some kind of harmony like a lot of other music games do, where you're matching like the guitar or something like that.
So it's more like a techno-y type thing.
Yeah. So, it's also very like call and response. So you'll hear like tuck ta da tuck tuck tuck, and so you have to press the button like tuck ta da da tuck tuck.
It's like Parappa the Rapper or something.
Kind of like that, yeah. But again, you know, in a very completely different visual style,
right?
But yeah, so it is kind of like that. But if there's one thing I have to talk about, it's the fact that like you can't control volume. There's no volume control anywhere. And
seems like a major oversight for a rhythm music game,
right? And it's also a problem because I don't know if it's just me. It might be just me, but I can barely hear some of the things that are coming up, and it's very important because you can't always see ahead of you. Sometimes, like you're in like these very narrow tunnels, and you just have to like listen for the, you know, dong, dong, pew, dong. And that means like, okay, I'm going to press like one, two, then there's a turn and then another dong. Like,
are you sure you didn't leave your system sounds down from 2 weeks ago?
No, my system sounds are at max, but I know what you're talking about. My system sounds are at max. So I don't know. But again, it's not that big of an issue because again, you have these checkpoints, you can come back. Then it just becomes an issue of just learning the map, which is, it's kind of disappointing in that sense, but the visuals and like just listening to the music overall kind of makes up for it. So,
mm-hmm. So are the rhythms the same every time? Like if you are suck at a song, you can just play it over and over again and learn it by rote?
I'm definitely sure you can. If you're talking about like, could you put in earplugs and learn it like that? Then I guess you could, but what's the point?
Well, I'm like, I used to be pretty big into Guitar Hero back when it was really, really popular.
Yeah.
And like, there were just like some songs on higher difficulty levels that you just had to practice. You couldn't do them if you didn't practice them.
I haven't gotten that far, so I mean maybe in the later levels or something like that, but I haven't encountered anything like that. Okay. And it does have a VR mode for PlayStation VR.
That sounds intriguing.
Yeah, so I have heard obviously we don't have one here, but I have heard of people like there's no actual change in the game itself, but now you're surrounded by the darkness, and that kind of adds a new layer of
tension. Interesting.
Yep.
Sounds cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, my other game was Event Zero, which is kind of less of a puzzle game and more of just an exploration game. Mm-hmm. There are some puzzles in it, but mostly it's just about sort of finding out what happened. So the game is set in like an alternate history where the initial moon landing spurred a gigantic development in space exploration. and people just went crazy, and we went to like Europa by like 1980 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Like the Earth just went, like, we unified about space exploration, which was cool, but also somehow created this upper class and subclass of people. Like, there's the haves and the have-nots. Like, do you see that Matt Damon movie, Elysium?
Yes. Yes, I
do. Yeah, so kind of like that. You know, there's the haves and the have-nots, right?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like that. It turns out, like, you were a have-not, but, like, you were really super smart. So you got put into the haves class and became an astronaut, and you get sent on a Europa mission 11 in like, it's like 20, I think it like 2014 or something like that, that you get sent to Europa mission 11. And there's AIs that control all the ships. So you get out there and it turns out that your AI, pulls a red alert and ejects you from the ship. And there's a whole like little story there that you can actually choose a few branching paths. This is even just the intro. Like, you don't even get to see anything. This is just text. You get to choose some choices. But so you can choose. I played it a couple of times due to some save issues. And I chose different paths. And you learn different things about what the AI actually did and like what happened to the rest of the crew. But the gist of it is that you are the sole survivor of Europa 11 exploding, and you drift in space for a while, and then you find like this ancient, like weird luxury cruiser that was launched in the 80s as some sort of vain experiment. And you go towards it because it's, you know, your only hope of success, and you get there and you meet the AI of this ship called, what's his name? Kaizen. Yeah. And he lets you on, and he basically tasks you with shutting down the experimental drive and engine drive of this ship. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it's like powered by dark matter or black hole or something. And he tells you that it's bad for existence, and he wants you to kill it. And then once you get rid of the drive, he'll take you home. And so basically the whole game is you forging a relationship with this AI. I've read reviews where people were like really happy and friendly with the AI, and he was like really nice and helpful and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But because the AI of your initial ship like was kind of shitty, I assumed that Kaizen was in on it. And so I was like really hostile towards him. Like, I really didn't like him at all. And so he didn't like me back and became really unhelpful. So it's been really hard for me to progress through the game.
Oh, don't you hate it when the AI just rebels like that?
Yeah. Yeah. But actually, like, that's one of the main selling points of the game, is that the AI responds somewhat naturally. I mean, it is an AI made 30 years ago, and it's been drifting in space for 30 years. So like, he's a little fucked up and he doesn't always respond naturally, which is sort of how they respond. That's how they explain away the fact that it's not actually an AI, you know, it's going to have weird responses. But it actually feels kind of natural.
It would be interesting if it had different, I don't want to say like roguelike, but each different playthrough had a different kind of personality. Like you said, you were antagonistic, so it became antagonistic.
Right.
I think it would be interesting if like you were antagonistic and it was like, dude, come on, why can't we be friends? Like,
well, he actually did try to do that at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
But then he wouldn't give me what I wanted, so I started cursing at him. And he wasn't responsive to that. But I read one review where somebody had found in some logs on the ship, like there was one of the crew members that had like these pet names and nicknames for the AI. Uh-huh. And so they started using those nicknames with the AI, and he like created his own nickname for the player. So like they had their little buddy thing going on. And then I felt really bad for being such a douche to this AI.
Did you apologize?
No.
Maybe you should. Maybe that's the step towards healing the universe.
Maybe I should.
And the dark matter engine.
Maybe I should. But it's actually very visually good looking game. there are some really high tension sequences, like when you get ejected into space. There's a one that I've been through where you just get like sucked out into space, and I had to try to talk the AI into letting me back into the ship. And, you know, having already antagonized him, it wasn't very easy. So, yeah, no, it's really good. I don't really know how good the puzzles are. I mean, it's supposedly only about a 3 to 5 hour game. I've only put in about 2 hours. And most of that was me wandering around outside the ship trying to get back in. So I don't know how very difficult it is, but atmosphere wise, it's great.
Oh, you want back in, do you? You want back in?
Yeah.
I'll need an apology.
No, no, he pretended that he didn't know me. He's like, Jason. Yeah, he's like, Jason's dead. He got sucked into space. And I'm like, no, I'm Jason. He's like, prove it. What's my name? I'm like, Kaizen. He's like, you could have known that from looking at the ship. Prove it. Yeah, he was a dick. But I was a dick first, so.
Yeah, that's right. You called him names, and he left you to die in space.
I mean, basically.
I guess that's, you know, about even.
Yeah.
So, the last game I played and am still playing is Monster Hunter Stories. And,
yeah.
This is currently only available in Japan, and unfortunately there are no announcements as of yet of whether it's coming to the West. But they do have English language localization stuff already in place.
That seems odd.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, the text and dialogue hasn't been translated, but, for example, the difference in this game with the main Monster Hunter series is that instead of hunting the monsters, you are part of a clan that kind of lives in harmony with them. And and so you were a monster writer, and so
a journalist, if you will.
No.
Writer. I thought you said writer. Okay. Yes.
Writer.
Okay. I gotcha.
There you go. So you are a monster writer, and so you ride the monsters, but the Japanese word. So normally these are called monster in Japanese, but
right.
Here they're called otomon, which is like a kind of portmanteau of like otomo, friend, and
right.
monster. So otomo right. monster. So and then, like I said, they've localized some of these terms. So that was localized as monsty in English.
That seems like a bad translation.
Well, I mean, it's just supposed to be cutesy and stuff.
Yeah, fair
enough.
This is
definitely much more aimed at a younger age than Monster Hunter.
This is the Monster Hunter equivalent of World of Final Fantasy, right?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, they've even got like an anime out now, and yeah. So it's doing all this stuff. Like I said, I don't know if it's coming out to the West, but it seems like it will because they have this stuff going on. But anyway, like I said, you are a monster writer. You can do all the basic stuff that you can do in the original game. So you can select your character's, gender and, their appearance and their voice and everything like that. But, this time you're a child instead of a fully grown adult. And in the tradition of, Japanese role-playing games like this, they say, okay, well, you're a 10-year-old who wants to go out in the world by yourself with all these dangerous monsters. Yeah, sure, why not? Go. That's always
is your mother dead and is your father an evil overlord?
I've never seen my mother or father, so I wouldn't know about that.
Raised by wolves.
But there is like this really awkward moment where like you run into this stranger in the forest, and then they come to your village, or she and her friend come to your village, and she says, "Oh yeah, I just travel around the world researching monsters." And then your friend says, like, "Oh, can I go with you?" "Oh yeah, sure." Like, "Oh, I just met you today, and I'm gonna go travel with you." what could go wrong? But yeah. And then there's some other silly stuff in the story. I mean, I'm nitpicking here, but there's silly stuff in the story because the whole like setup is that your clan is the only clan in the world that actually rides monsters instead of hunting them. You live in harmony with the monsters. But then the first shot that comes in on your village shows a giant windmill where I don't know what you call them, the spokes of the windmill, I guess it's spokes.
That's about right.
Yeah. Are made of dragon wings. So,
that seems wrong.
Yeah. Not even like tanned leather or anything. Like the actual full wing is on there. And then you talk to people who are like, there's been, Velocidrome, which has been kind of looking at the village the wrong way. Could you go kill it?
Wait, like, what?
Yeah, it's like, it's been stalking around the village and just, it doesn't look right. Can you go kill it? I'm like, okay.
It's not what you're supposed to do, is it?
Yeah. You know, you get past all that stuff. The main heart of the game is in the gameplay itself. So it's an open world game where, you go around, in these gigantic fields. It's not like Monster Hunter where you have like small bits, small little areas that you have to go from one to the next. Like there are still areas, but they're much, much, much larger than a standard Monster Hunter area. And in these areas are also caves, and you enter the cave, you go inside, and there's a nest, and you can go to the nest, and you can pick up eggs. And when you collect the eggs, you can go back to the village and hatch new monsties. I'm gonna switch to monsters. That's a weird word to say. So
wait, so you invade the monsters' homes,
yep.
Steal their babies,
yep.
And then raise them in Stockholm Syndrome?
Yep.
Sounds awesome.
And in fact, they hatch with saddles on. So, like, that's convenient.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They hatch fully grown. Well, not fully grown. They're kind of mini versions, but, like half the size of the regular monster. So, and with the saddle. So again, very convenient. And of course, you have battles. This is a battle like, the Tales series kind of. Where, it's turn-based, but you run into, the monster on the field. It's not a random encounter. You run into them on the field, and then it switches to battle mode. And the battle mode's kind of interesting because, you have, I think I've talked about this before, but so I'll just go real quick. You have your monster, it takes its own actions, and then you have yourself, you can control yourself, obviously. And you select a target, and you can select power, speed, or technical attack, and it's kind of rock, paper, scissors. So, power beats technical beats speed, and speed beats power. Now you don't know what the enemy is gonna choose, obviously, until everyone's selected what they're gonna do, but, you can kind of get a sense of it. If you're a Monster Hunter fan, then you know, like, this is a speed monster, this is a technical monster, and they have their leanings. But the smaller monsters will stick to those leanings, but the larger monsters, they can switch it up. They might be mostly technical, but then throw in a speed or something like that. And as you level up both yourself and your monsters, they get new techniques, and the more attacks you do, this little gauge in the center of the bottom screen fills up, and that's your rider's gauge. Mm. And the more, it's like you get trust points, basically. And the more trust points you get, you can start controlling your monster's actions. You can tell it, okay, now I want you to do this special technique or this. And that costs a little bit of the gauge. But, when you get it fully, you know, filled up, you can actually ride your monster, which you can no longer use items or select special skills, but you're a lot stronger in both attack and defense. And you have like a special combination attack. But as soon as you use that, you split back into two. So there's a lot of strategy involved. It didn't seem like there was that much at first, but the more I start fighting and battling, I can see like there's a little bit more challenge But it is a kid's game, so you can get through.
Right. Do they have that crafting thing that most Monster Hunter games have?
Yes. So pretty much everything you can do in Monster Hunter, you can also do in this game. Yeah, they have the crafting. I don't think there's a chance anymore. So in the Monster Hunter games, you can actually fail when you try to combine things. And that kind of adds to the wildness factor. But here, I don't think that's in there anymore. So you can just craft to your heart's content. And it also makes things simpler. Like, you don't have to carry nets or fishing rods or pickaxes to do all the mining and fishing and bug catching anymore.
Right.
It's silly, goofy fun. And like, it's just fun to go into the nest and see like what monsters you can get. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, 'cause if you're into Monster Hunter, sounds like a good game.
Yep. And, so I hope that comes out for the West. And that is, all we have been playing, unless there's anything else you've got.
Nothing. I've got something slated, but I haven't played it yet.
Okay. Well then that's all we'll talk about this week. And, we do have games coming out next week, though.
Do we now?
Yes, yes. This is actually the start of the big FPS push for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Although I think you and I know I and Chris are not that big on FPSs, but anyway, what do we have coming out? We have Farming Simulator 17 for Xbox One and PS4. So yeah, live the dream. Skylanders Imaginators for all consoles, Xbox One, PS4, and Wii U. Crazy Machines 3 for PC. Eagle Flight for the Rift. Exist Archive: The Other Side of the Sky, PS4 and Vita. Super Dimension Neptune versus Sega Hard Girls.
Oh, I saw that. That looks amazing. Not.
Yeah, and that's for the Vita. Batman Return to Arkham. That is the first two Arkham games together for Xbox One and PS4. Battlefield 1. That's the first volley in the FPS launch lineup.
Do want to try that.
For Xbox One, PS4, and PC. I will say that I'm very interested in the single-player campaign, but I will wait for a fire sale for that. Rock Band Rivals is coming to Xbox One and PS4. Macross Delta Scramble for the Vita. Pixel Gear for the PSVR. And Lego Harry Potter Collection for PS4. And the big one for PC players is Civ 6 is coming up.
Yeah, you know, I would play that, but I have a life and other things to do.
Yeah. I will say, though, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I've been hearing about Civ 6 for, I don't know, like weeks now. I thought it was already out. I've been hearing people talking about playing full campaigns.
Well, I mean, I think there's been some pre-releases, like that PewDiePie thing where people got some advanced copies, but it's just not out yet.
I mean, I guess I can see it, because especially if you're going to send out review copies, that game just takes, like, hundreds of hours.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I actually did play Civ 5, and I was just like, I didn't play anything else for, like, a month. And I only played, like, three games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in that boat with Persona. like, several dozen hours in, and I'm still only, like, I don't know. Halfway through. Anyway, that will do it for this week. Go ahead and check out our website at kaijupop.com for reviews and news and other information about games. You can also follow us on Twitter at kaijupop, or you can follow me at Kyoshi Banzai.
Follow me at Gibsaurus.
And that will do it for this week. So thank you. Like and subscribe our YouTube channel, also kaijupop, and have a good time, guys. Goodbye.
See ya.